From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Trust. It's a really big word. We all take it seriously, especially when it comes to our personal relationships. But what about the trust we put in people whose job it is to protect us? Our doctors, government regulators, law enforcement. Today, we look at stories of people in power who violate that trust and the everyday people who have to deal with the aftermath. And we begin 30,000 feet in the air.
At this time, I'm going to ask that you fasten your seatbelts.
For the last 20 years, I've been living out of a suitcase, and I am constantly doing the airport security shuffle.
Security screening can be a hassle, but security doesn't have to be a stressful experience.
But a lot of the time it is. Remove your shoes, take off your belt, take your laptop out of the bag, and on and on and on. The whole thing can be a serious hassle. And I can tell you firsthand, I was a flight attendant for about 10 years. After 9/11, the job went from fun and freewheeling to a serious, almost paranoid atmosphere. In those days, it was clear. The industry and the government had to make the public feel safe. And thus, the TSA and the airport security shuffle.
At TSA, your safety is our priority.
Part of that push to make us more secure in the sky is the Air Marshal Service. They're the armed undercover agents trained to stop terrorists. And since 9/11, the agency has grown from several dozen to several thousand. Along the way, there have been some problems. And now there's something new. Allegations that air marshals were pulled from their assigned flights not to go after terrorists, but to hook up for secret affairs or hang out in nice hotels. Seriously, sort of an OKCupid and Travelocity rolled into one. This all came to light because of an epic Facebook chat between two women in a relationship with the same man. In December of 2013, Lisa Duran received some alarming Facebook messages from someone she'd never met. The person claimed to be the lover of Lisa's fiancé at the time, Roy Duran, and used the screen name Roy Duran's other e-girlfriend.
And the messages turned graphic pretty fast.
That's Reveal's Andrew Becker.
The person said she was in a relationship with Roy Duran and sent naked photos of him as proof.
It turns out the other e-girlfriend was Michelle D'Antonio. She and Roy both worked for the Federal Air Marshal Service. Roy was an air marshal and D'Antonio was a scheduler.
D'Antonio had access to government databases that she could go in, look up his flight schedule, and allegedly tweak it as need be to get him closer to her. She worked outside of Washington, D.C. Other rendezvous were in New York, Seattle, even Hawaii.
And that's where the story moves from a love spat to an issue of national security. You see, after the air marshal ended the affair, he and his fiance took the flight scheduler to court to get a restraining order. They also complained to the TSA. That caught the eye of federal investigators. They're looking into whether D'Antonio changed flights for other air marshals.
That really opens up what has become something of a scandal, with investigators trying to understand how widespread was this. How many times did this scheduler tweak or manipulate a schedule so guys could go to New York City or go to a baseball game or sometimes meet up with her?
So if she's moving people around to go to places that are more desirable, does that mean that she is possibly moving people off of high-risk flights?
The real concern, I think the real threat, is whether this scheduler was taking air marshals off of flights that may have been deemed high risk or priority flights, cross-country flights with large fuel loads. Investigators are trying to learn, trying to understand if security was put at risk because air marshals that should have been on those flights or had been assigned to those flights weren't on them.
This sounds like a reality TV show gone bad. It's salacious and therefore it's attention grabbing, and no one would go on tape to talk about it. But the real problem here is deeper than just a love triangle.
Mr. McLean, look forward to hearing your story.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Ranking Member Lynch and Ranking Member Cummings.
That's Robert McLean, an Air Marshal whistleblower testifying in front of Congress last year.
I was in the first class of 35 Air Marshals to graduate after the 9/11 attacks of 01.
McLean says he joined the Air Marshals to serve his country and fight terrorists. But his biggest battle was facing incompetent managers and arbitrary rules, like requiring male air marshals to wear military-style haircuts, suits, and ties. Kind of hard to foil the bad guys if everyone knows you're there to foil the bad guys.
It became a joke. We'd have children come up to us wanting our autograph or wanting to take a picture with us. We had big, jovial gentlemen that would want to buy us a drink. I remember a nice lady shook my hand and thanked me for my service. It was very uncomfortable, and it made conducting our mission almost impossible.
Then came what McLean calls the perfect storm. Officials issued a confidential memo warning that Al-Qaeda was planning to hijack a long-distance flight. Air marshals were put on high alert, but at that very moment, the TSA ordered all agents to cancel any mission longer than 3 hours. The reason? The agency was running out of money and couldn't pay for hotel rooms.
It made no sense whatsoever.
So he complained to supervisors. He reached out to the inspector general's office.
Not only the agency was in violation of the law, but it was clearly putting everybody in danger.
No one responded. McLean leaked the story to a couple reporters, and the news exploded. Lawmakers stepped in. Travel restrictions on air marshals were lifted. But 3 years later, McLean was fired after the agency discovered he was the source of the leak. He fought back, taking his case all the way to the Supreme Court. And this January, he won. The justices ruled that McLean's firing violated the Federal Whistleblower Act. Now he's become a beacon for disgruntled agents.
It's routine that I get phone calls from air marshals telling me that a manager, a supervisor, is using the flight scheduling to set up a rendezvous. And it wasn't just having sexual trysts, but it was also to go to a golf tournament or to visit family or something else.
The mentality at the Air Marshal Service is that these air marshals are just filling seats. You know, they say just get on the flight and do your mission.
Clay Biles is a former Navy SEAL who spent 5 years as an air marshal and recently wrote a history of the service. He says mismanagement has led to the party atmosphere that we've been hearing about. Some agents even hire prostitutes when they're on assignment.
They go out and they pick up prostitutes overseas. I mean, it's a way to kill time. You might be flying from San Francisco to Hong Kong and then on your way to Vietnam and then back to Hong Kong and then off to San Francisco. That's a 6-day trip. Well, what are you going to do with all that per diem you get from the government? You're going to pick up women and have some fun while you're away from the wife.
We reached out to the Transportation Security Administration. They didn't want to talk to us, so we spoke to Kip Holly. He ran the TSA from 2005 to 2009. He says the current allegations are serious, but he questions whether this type of misbehavior could really affect flight safety.
I can't believe that they would be able to impact the overall picture because the overall picture is scrutinized so carefully.
That scrutiny includes monitoring flights that are considered high risk and regular briefings between the TSA and intelligence agencies. What's more, Holly says that while there have been some internal problems,
the bulk of that organization is a very high-performing one, and I would not take the most effective, most flexible, best hardball capability that you have in the United States government to fight terrorists and sacrifice it at the altar of somebody who's fooling with the flight schedules.
Some lawmakers aren't convinced. Remember that love triangle between the air marshal and the flight scheduler? Well, prompted by our reporting, Congress is now investigating whether she diverted agents from high-risk missions. There are also questions about whether the service's $800 million budget is worth it. Reveal's Andrew Becker says the challenge now is one of leadership. Is the agency focused on its core mission, protecting flyers?
The concern here for a number of air marshals is that the management is out to lunch. The way one former air marshal described it to us is that when the managers look in the mirror, no one's looking back.
For more on Andrew Becker's investigation, check out our website, revealnews.org. This story was produced by Michael Montgomery. Now, a story about the power of a photograph. In our last episode, we explored the life of a troubled Army medic, a guy named Jonathan Melance. Melance served in a tank battalion in Iraq, and in our story, he talked about treating prisoners at a remote army base after they were brutally interrogated and tortured. It was something the public knew nothing about.
It's from my point of view, keeping a person alive while these so-called interrogation techniques are going on, it definitely burns an image to your brain that you'll never forget.
Melance gave medical aid to these prisoners, but he also took part in the abuse. and that left him deeply troubled after he came home.
It's been really hard over the years coming to terms with what actually happened over there.
Melance died of a drug overdose 6 years ago, but he left behind an important piece of evidence, a snapshot. It shows John and an Army lieutenant smiling and posing with an Iraqi prisoner. Thing is, the prisoner isn't smiling. He's grimacing in pain. Our story caught the eye of the U.S. Army. After our broadcast, they opened an investigation into possible war crimes. Joining me to talk about these developments is our reporter, Joshua Phillips. He spent 3 years getting to know Jonathan Melance for a book about U.S. torture in Iraq and Afghanistan. So this photo we've got two soldiers here with a detainee who's clearly in distress. Why is this photo a big deal?
Well, for one thing, this photograph shows what Jonathan Melance and other of his fellow soldiers had alleged, that they were involved in prisoner abuse and torture, and that there were officers that were present. So this photograph shows Jonathan Melance and a lieutenant beside him. And in the foreground, there's a detainee who's sweating profusely, and his face is strained in pain as he's holding up this heavy wooden board.
So how did the snapshot make it all the way from Iraq to the USA and then into your hands?
Right. So these photographs are actually very rare. You know, since the Abu Ghraib prison abuse scandal of 2004, there really haven't been any publicly disclosed photographs that feature U.S. forces engaging in detainee abuse and torture. In Melance's case, he took his photographs and he sent them back home with letters to his friend John Hutton. John Hutton basically kept the photographs and the letters for John in his home and ensured that no one saw them.
So you actually sat down with John Hutton and he went through the letters with you. Let's hear some tape of that.
We put sandbags over their heads and broke their thumbs by accident, of course. He was talking about how they burned them with cigarettes and waking them up all hours of the night. I mean, at the time, I'm sure everybody was doing it, and you know, they were having a good time and messing around with these prisoners. But I think once he got back into reality and just laying there at nights thinking about it or whatever, yeah, I think it got to him.
So was that the only photo?
John Melance told me that he took many other photographs of detainee abuse and torture, and his friends and family saw some of these pictures, and they even described them to me. Family members of his described pictures in which there were detainees that were chained to bars and hanging from bars. There were soldiers that were pointing guns at detainees' heads in this very menacing way, things like that. But the family grew very distressed when they saw these photographs. They feared that it would force John to revisit wartime trauma, and so they threw them away. And so, as far as I know, this is the only photograph of his that survived.
Now, Josh, for several years now, you've taken this information to the military brass about what's going on. I mean, you even tracked down the officer in the photo, Lieutenant Philip Blanchard. He's now a captain in the National Guard, but until recently, nothing happened.
Yes. It really surprised me that after a dozen times contacting the military since 2008, inquiring if there had been any investigations into these allegations of detainee abuse and torture, they never got back to us with any information. It was only when we published this photograph that they seemed to take serious interest and then say they were going to take action.
Okay, so now that there's an Army investigation, what do you think will happen? I mean, how do you think this will turn out given other cases in the past?
It's very unusual that they're reopening this case, and it's very hard to speculate about what might actually happen. In the case of the Abu Ghraib perpetrators, they served relatively longer sentences, but for the most part, most of the punishment for prisoner abuse and torture has been fairly light for military service members.
Joshua Phillips, we will keep our eyes on these developments. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Coming up later on Reveal, another story about veterans coming home from war and the impact one man had on their lives.
I called him the Candyman.
Staffers say they knew what a VA doctor was up to, but no one was listening.
I said that your own chief of psychiatry hands out narcotics like they're candy. And the director, sat back in his chair and, laughed.
That's later this hour on Reveal.